Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Predators will be back out on the ice tomorrow night in Washington versus the Capitals. We'll have David Poyle coming up at 11:15. Super Bowl 54 was the big media night last night. They used to do the media day today. Like this currently, like right now, is when they would be doing their big media day. They moved it, I don't know how many years ago. They moved it to Monday nights.
Yeah. I feel like they've been doing that night. Like the last five-ish years?
I was going to say 3 to 4.
Was it like that the last time you were there, which has probably been 4 or 5 years?
That was the last time was New Orleans. That's the last Super Bowl I've been to.
It was you and D. Mason Brad, right?
No. D-Hop.
Yeah. I think it was.
Was New York after New Orleans? 49ers, Ravens, Broncos.
I think that's after.
Seahawks. Broncos Seahawks was New York. I thought that was before. And then 49ers Ravens was after. Wasn't that 2012 season? So 2013?
Let me look. Because now
both of those were on. Both of those were on Tuesdays, the normal Tuesday. Yeah. I think it was right after that, shortly after that is when they changed it to Monday nights. But we're watching some of the coverage. I know Teresa Walker is down there covering it for Associated Press. And I don't know. But what do you think? Do you feel like there's a buzz around this game? To be honest, I don't feel like there is.
It doesn't feel like that when
you lose the AFC.
Is that
your
what it is?
Team loses late like
is that. Is that what it is? Everybody's just disappointed?
Yeah, people will be watching on
New
Sunday
York was
for
the
sure.
year after.
No, I understand
and
they're going to be watching.
And there's
but.
Not a – there hasn't been – I think that this is, again, maybe we've lost a little of the romance in all sports. We just talked about baseball last hour. But the football players are trained not to say anything dumb in the media thing, right? Who is the 49ers are really a team, other than maybe Richard Sherman that are devoid of any big personalities that have been in the game a long time and have got a lot of skins on the wall and are flamboyant. Richard Sherman's the only guy. And then the Chiefs have Mahomes, who hasn't been playing for very long, right? And he's fairly charismatic, but he's also smart. He's the son of a baseball pitcher. He knows how to play the game. He's not going to say anything that's going to be bulletin board material. So what do you have? Right? You don't have the doomsday defense. You don't have the steel curtain. You don't have – it's very vanilla, right, in terms of what – every year it's like, don't do that. Don't say anything stupid. And most years they don't. Then the one guy says something and, oh, can you believe it? It gets crazy. They know the game now.
So let me ask you this. The Patriots never said anything either, ever.
Right.
But
they were the king of the mountain.
But it didn't feel ever like, nobody's really saying anything about this. I just don't feel like there's – you said, well, they're going to watch. Yeah, they're going to watch. We know. Everybody's going to watch.
Sure.
But do people – are people in this week going, man, I can't wait for Sunday. I cannot wait. I just don't feel like – it just doesn't, and maybe it's okay. What you said. Maybe it's the disappointment here that we're not talking about the local team and their season hasn't been over for 3 weeks or a month and it's been over for just a week. I don't know, but I just don't feel like there's this groundswell for Sunday's game. Like everywhere you turn, people are going, man, what do you think, Mahomes? Garoppolo, what do you think? How big? Kelsey? I mean, Kittle? What do you think? I don't feel that.
So I think I think we might look at it differently just because we get so enthralled. I know for me, 2 weeks of going on the road in Baltimore and Kansas City, I mean, I was just exhausted. So it's like it hasn't been top of mind. And I know I've felt this way during Preds playoff runs, that it's just once the Preds got knocked out after Winnipeg, for instance, the game 7, I just didn't pay attention as much just because I was so mentally wiped out because of my job. So I think that's kind of how I look at it. I think to Willie's point, the people here are just like, whatever. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say go Chiefs because they have the thought process of, okay, I'd rather be knocked out by the eventual champions. So Go Chiefs, AFC, whatever.
AFC.
Yeah.
AFC. AFC.
Does it
AFC.
Just mean, does it just mean more? Or is that just one thing? Anyway, but I just, yeah, I'm with you. It doesn't have the oomph. Now, I think here's another part of it, because it all started this week. I think Kobe has taken some of the wind out of people's sails too.
No, there's no doubt.
I think
ESPN has been wall to wall.
Yeah. And so I think that's a lot of it. That I thought about it last night when I got home and I turned on ESPN and what are they talking about? They're talking about
it's
Kobe.
Been wall to wall.
And I said, you know what? And then they brought something up about the Super Bowl. I'm like, oh yeah, that is this week.
Yeah. Like you had to sit there and you had to wait a while on SportsCenter to get anything from Super Bowl. And it was
usually,
the media night. That would be all they would be talking about.
Because all the shows are in Miami and they have SportsCenter on the road and Fox is there. Everybody's there. But they're doing Kobe stuff, and rightfully so. I think every media outlet has handled it, you know, the way that they should. I mean, it should be front of mind with Kobe and Gianna and everyone else that perished in the helicopter crash. So it should be that way. But I believe that's probably a part of why there's not as much hype right now. I think it picks up as the week goes on.
It's fair.
But I definitely think that has a lot to do with it.
That's probably more the answer.
Yeah.
Because it starts building and the hype begins whenever the teams land. And unfortunately, when that happened, that story was out there.
Right.
So that kind of took over the sports world. Yeah. So probably later in the week, I would say by Thursday for sure, it'll be full blown.
Yeah, and
maybe even tomorrow.
And people are going to watch. They're you know, invested. You got two, you know, this I guess you could say is probably chalk, that you have the two best teams that are going face, you know, head to head. Really good offenses, really good defenses. So people pay attention, and it should be a good game. I hope it's a good game. Because I think after this week and everything, you know, the Lakers, they canceled the game tonight, but I believe Friday they're supposed to play. That's people are going to watch that. That's going to be emotional. But I think once you get to Sunday, people are going to be looking for that escape again.
Why did they cancel tonight?
I read is both teams got with the league, and they just made the decision that that's what was best for everybody. I know TNT was launching. They're launching their new Tuesday night deal, or were supposed to tonight. They're going to delay that to next week. They're going to show the early game, which is Boston, but then the pre and the post game and halftime shows will actually take place from the Staples Center and will be Kobe tributes with Shaq and the Inside the NBA crew and everybody. But they're going to basically make tonight about him, but not play the game. I don't know the exact reason. I just would assume they all got together and was like, you know what? It's just we're not there yet. We're not ready to do this. So, I mean, for the guys that actually have to play the game, I mean, I get it. We're not there. We don't know the emotions that they're feeling. So, if they don't feel like that they can do it tonight, then postpone it. So,
I thought Shaq said something really interesting. He said, "We've all been robbed of Kobe's Hall of Fame speech because he's set to be eligible, which they're going to put him in." I mean, now there wasn't it next year he was set to
this year.
Was it this year?
2020.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's a no-brainer. But that was a really good. I didn't really think about that. And he said, you know, we're going to get robbed of his speech, and it was pretty interesting. Shaq was like, I was very curious to see who he was going to call to give him the intro. He's like, was it going to be me? Was it going to be? I mean, he started naming people.
Yeah,
I was surprised. He said. Himself, quite honestly.
I'm not. I think that would have been fitting. They had such a history together, both good and bad. I mean, and he said, I read his post that he made about it of, and he alluded to that of, you know, we had a history. I mean, we did a lot of good things, but then there was, you know, there were other things. They had the falling out, or not necessarily falling out. I think it was more
a little rivalry within.
Rivalry, yeah. That's the best. Because I think Kobe always had to, until he did it on his own, had to hear the, oh, well, Shaq, you were with Shaq.
And oh, yeah.
It was Shaq and thing. Kobe.
That was a big thing back
but then
the
Kobe did it on his own. And it was like right. that, you know, he won his titles on his own. And so I think that was part of the chip on his shoulder of proving that he could do it without Shaq. And I think everybody looks back on it now and goes, okay, you know, Kobe's one of the greats. I mean, top three.
Well, they went on to win without each other. Too,
right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, Shaq did it too. Mm-hmm. It worked out for both of them.
Yep.
But.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to come back with David Poyle. We're going to give you a chance to win tickets to see Roger Waters at Bridgestone Arena on August 18th. But first, you must answer this Super Bowl question.
All right. We're going to go to Super Bowl. And this is interesting because the more recent the Super Bowl, the less effective I am at answering these questions. But here's a good one. The retirement of Eli Manning last week, he made the speech. What does he have to hang his hat on? Two Super Bowl MVPs, both against the Patriots. The second one is Super Bowl. Let me do my Roman numerals. Super Bowl, blah, blah, blah. That would be 46. Super Bowl 46. The game is in the hands, thanks to an Aaron Hernandez touchdown catch. Patriots lead 17-15 in the closing minutes of the game. The Giants have the ball deep in Patriots territory. Patriots have no timeouts. The Patriots want to let the Giants score. The Giants, if they kneel on the ball, could kick a field goal and run the clock out. But this running back scores what ends up being the game-winning touchdown for the Giants. Name the running back who gets to the one-yard line, freezes, and then says, I'll just fall in here, I'll score the touchdown. But it gave Brady one more chance with the ball. And they threw the Hail Mary, Gronk almost caught it. You could probably picture that. Who is the running back?
There you go, 615-737-1025, 737-1025. Call in, tell Elijah the answer. And you're going to see Roger Waters at Bridgestone Arena on August 18th. We'll come back with Predators General Manager David Poyle, his weekly chat with us next. Back here on Darren Donican Chase on this Tuesday, we say hello to David Poyle. I bring up Tuesday because he joins us every Tuesday at 11:15. Predators General Manager. And every week he is brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. I must always introduce you this way because it's the nice and formal way to do it. I probably know your answer, but David, how you doing?
I'm ready to start a new day. I'm sure you're saying that because of what happened last night. Again, very disappointing start to coming out of the break. I really felt through a series of meetings with our coaches and our players in terms of the, you know, the roles and the game plan, you know, objectives, all those things, a little bit of a freshness from the, you know, how chaotic it was the previous 2 weeks with the coaching change, what have you, that this would be a pivotal, you know, time in our season, of course, and that we would get off to a good start. And the loss last night was anything but what I expected. So very disappointing, and we're back at it again today with the practice as we speak, and we're going to get on a plane in a couple of hours to head to Washington and then New Jersey, and we're going to find a way to get a couple of wins.
Looks like head coach John Hines was moving some bodies around in practice today before you guys head to Washington. So how much does this now that you're off the break, it's going to be very compact the rest of the way. It's going to be the foot on the gas. A lot of hockey, and especially a lot of hockey until the trading deadline. How much do results change from day to day, game to game, for you, David, on what you're trying to do before the deadline, or does it?
Well, it does because as you know, being on your show every week, and you know the questions are all, you know, related to, you know, how we're doing as a team, how we're doing as individuals. So whenever I'm on the show, it's either after you know, a couple of wins, or in this case, after a loss. So it does affect where you go. We do have a trading deadline coming up here on February 24th. So we don't have a lot of time or four games to decide whether we're going to be a team that's going to be a buyer or a seller, or for that matter, just remain neutral. So, you know, every day takes us in a little bit different direction. I still look at our team more on paper, honestly, than on ice, and think that we have a really good team that should be having a record that's better than that we have currently. But again, after, you know, we watched last night, it's certainly we're not getting the results, and we're not getting the play, you know, from you know, certain individuals and from our team as a whole to put us in a place that we're going to be winning on a consistent basis. And we've been saying that, and I've been saying that for a lot this year, so things are going to have to change pretty quickly here, or I'm going to have to reassess exactly what my expectations were at the beginning of the season.
John Hines was asked about Ryan Johansson at the end of the press conference last night, and he was one of the guys that he was more than willing to openly talk about that you guys need more out of. He's your top line centerman, and as you know, he's got a big contract, and right now has 27 points through 48 games. How do you, because he's obviously one of those guys that you're trying to get going. You need a guy like Ryan Johansson producing to get things going where you need it to go. So how do you go about trying to make that happen going into game 49?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, I think Ryan is somewhat typical of a lot of our problems this year with some inconsistency. He was one of our best players in our previous game against Buffalo, playing a very important role and playing against the first line of Buffalo, shutting down Jack Eichel. And, you know, the last night playing against the top line of Toronto, it went the other way where they had goals against, and it just wasn't a good night. What's always in my evaluation is the history of these players and what they can do. And, you know, I don't think there's any dodge in it. I mean, we can talk about Ryan and we can talk about other players, and I'd say 90% of the time comes down to your best players, your best seven or eight players, how they're playing, what their contribution is with your team, and that's going to probably be the difference of whether you're win or lose. And, you know, I've said this before, it's our best players are not, you know, I'd certainly give Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi a pass on what I'm saying there, because I think they've both been good, and Roman obviously has been fabulous this year, but I can't say that about anybody else in terms of their total contribution to our team, their consistency. We have none of these top players are having career years, so it's got to change quickly if we're going to be a playoff team.
David Poile on the line with us. This is only your third coach in over two decades here, and so you had a long relationship with Barry Trotz, and this year until you know, after the Winter Classic, 5.5 years with Peter Laviolette, you knew the routine, the conversations, what you guys would talk about. Now you've got a new guy. How is that dynamic working, David, where everybody's trying to figure out the stuff that we're discussing, including your brand new head coach? How much does that change what you guys need to do, general manager, head coach, behind the scenes?
It's a lot of change. I mean, both on and off the ice, you know, for the coaches and the player, the coach is trying to implement, I'd say, some different systems and creating maybe different roles for the player, certainly trying different line combinations. And all this, you know, for a team that has been pretty stable for the last five and a half years under Peter Laviolette, I think is not easy. When you've been playing, a certain way and asking players to play a different way, I think it's hard. But we don't have a lot of time, so regardless of what I say here, it doesn't matter. We have to be able to play. It's still a game of hockey. There's a certain way that you need to play. The mistakes that we're making on the ice are really nothing to do with, in my opinion, with coaching. It's just a lot of mental mistakes, the turnovers, the coverage or lack of coverage. I could go through specifically every goal, and you know, it's not that you want to be in a position to just always point the finger, but there's a situation where I want to give Toronto some credit, but I think, you know, we broke down on a lot of situations where I think a good team making good decisions, being a smart team and smart player that these things wouldn't be happening. So a lot of this, I think, is self-inflicted of what we're doing for ourselves. And I know that's correctable, but we need our players to be sharper, focused, more committed, more stay in the fight longer, as they say. You know, it's almost like I've been in the last 5.5 years. We've been on the other side of the coin, where we've always had a lot of momentum, and we, if anything went wrong, we seemed to have a good feeling that we could always bounce back, which we often did. This year has been a harder year in terms of we get down and we're having a hard time, you know, regrouping and you know, bringing it back into a situation where we're winning. You saw that in the last part of the third period last night. That, again, I think if the game might have been 10 minutes longer, you know, we might have even come back from 3 goals down. That's how good we were playing at that point. But, you know, up until that point, you know, Toronto was the better team.
David Poile is with us, Predators general manager. And David, this has to be a very difficult thing for yourself, the whole hockey ops department, the coaching staff, because it does seem, as you just sort of illustrated or alluded to, that it's mental to a large degree. It's not about the level of talent. It just seems to be that mental edge that, as you said, this is a nucleus that's been together for a long time and won a lot of games. And so going into a season, you probably wouldn't think that that would be an issue, that the confidence would sag in the middle of a game, things snowball. You would expect that more of a younger team. So, and I know that's got to be puzzling for the guys, too.
Yeah. Well, again, we've talked about expectations a lot this year. And, you know, we came in by most predictions that were out there from media or even in-house that, you know, we're going to be a strong team, one of the better teams in the National Hockey League, certainly be a team that would make the playoffs and a team that could compete for the Stanley Cup. And that's not the case. What I've learned in my time in the game is oftentimes last year has nothing to do with this year. And as we all know, in any walk of life, people either get better or get worse. Maybe they get approximately the same, but I think they get better or worse. And in this year right now, it's hard to say that very many players on our team have gotten better. And right now, this is falling under a bad year. And for the second time in this conversation, is that we need to move quickly here as individual players and as a team to put ourselves in a spot that we can be competitive and we can make the playoffs.
Well, one thing that the team is dealing with right now, and you've talked about the importance over the years of Ryan Ellis, but without him here, there are some defensemen that are having to play maybe a larger role than they have in the past when he's in the lineup. And it's hard to get a feel for when you'll get Ryan Ellis back. But does that change your thinking or speed up your thinking on any needs you might have or hockey trades you would need to make? I guess assess your decor right now, not knowing when you'll get your associate captain back, a huge linchpin on the team.
Well, I think you know, if you were to say what could be the worst thing that could happen to your team, that would be either having Roman Josi or Ellis out. Because of our where our defense is right now, it's we're taking off Ellis and trading away PK Subban last year, you know, put us a little bit I don't say vulnerable, but we felt that Favreau was up for the task, and he has for the most part, though maybe, you know, maybe he could use a little bit less ice time. But we also thought that veterans like Ekki, Hamhuis, Irwin, and Weber could certainly jump in there given the opportunity. And again, everybody, you know, is under the microscope here, and everybody is taking their share of criticism. And I think from our defense corps, they could do better too. I mean, they're not being as you know, as good as our defense has not been as good as it usually is every year, and it just goes on. I mean, our goaltending has come under some you know, criticism. So it's the whole package. It's there, but we have to be better in all of these areas. And, you know, right now we're not. It's hard defending our team right now based on what we're seeing, not every night, but most nights. And, you know, if we knew the answer, we would be making the changes to rectify that right away. But once again, it comes to, you know, having faith in a lot of individuals that I've seen play at a lot higher level than they're currently playing right now.
We're talking to David Poile, Predators general manager, of course, joins us every Tuesday at 11:15 here on Darren Donick and Chase. So, David, I like to make comparisons sometimes and look at different situations and try and find some way to relate them. And as I've kind of, as we've been talking about what the Titans are trying to do, I'm reminded of what you did with your team and some of the long-term contracts that you were able to sign, and you kept the core together, which is something that you've always talked about that you wanted to do to try and keep this group in a position to compete for championships. But what is the balance and the difficulty that you manage of keeping all those guys together, knowing that it's going to take money and long-term deals to keep them here, but to also allow the team to stay fresh and to bring in some of the depth?
That's a good question. And, you know, we wouldn't have signed the players if we didn't think they were part of the solution, not part of the problem. We wouldn't have kept the band together if we didn't believe that we had the pieces to stay competitive for not only this year, but for years going forward. I'm just going back to the same thing as, I mean, I can't get around it. I mean, on an individual basis, outside of maybe Roman Josi, nobody is having a career year. Nobody's having a better year than they had last year. Nobody's having a better year than they had the year before. We have a lot of players that are underperforming. And so that's the million-dollar question. Is this just a bad few games, a bad couple of months, a bad year? Or are these the right players? And, you know, as I said at the beginning of the interview, I really still believe in these guys as people and as hockey players, and we've had a lot of winning here in the last five plus years, and the guys that I'm talking about were a huge factor in that. So there's no regrets on, you know, signing guys and keeping the team together. The problem that we have right now is that we're just not playing up to our capabilities, and that's what we got to get done here quickly.
I know I've seen this out there in certain places, but I haven't asked you directly. What is the commitment to John Hines from a contractual standpoint of when he was hired?
He's signed for this year and two more years.
Okay, we haven't actually asked you that, so I wanted to bring that up. And look, something that I talked to Colin Blackwell and some of the other players last night, and you alluded to this of just how tough it is to kind of make the change mid-season and not have the practice time with the compacted schedule after the break. That creates other difficulties that you guys are facing.
Well, that's certainly part of it, but there's time that we spend together. There's meetings, there's video, there's time. It's difficult, but that can't be an excuse. We've been together for a bit here, and I think John is, in my conversations with him, he's very black and white as to how he wants the game to be played and what the roles are with everybody. I would be very disappointed if a player was not aware of what his role is and what's expected of him. I would be very disappointed if the players weren't taking responsibility for where we are right now. I mean, I haven't heard any of them say that they didn't think that we were a good team. I think it all, you know, there's a physical part of this game, and I think there's a mental part of playing in sports. And, you know, maybe that's something we haven't touched on. Maybe the mental side is that we just need to be more focused. It's a hard game to play if you're not totally ready or you're not totally invested. There's a physical aspect of it. I mean, you've got to be brave to play hockey, and it's a hard schedule, and it's hard work, and there's 60 minutes, and there's ebb and flow in a game where you might be a better team for a good portion of it, and it can get taken away from you in virtually a couple of minutes. So it's a whole bunch of things that go into making a successful team and a successful player. And, for the umpteenth time, we just have some individuals that need to play their best hockey here in these last 34 games. I'm not asking anybody to do anything that they're not capable of. Just ask them to be back to where when they were effective and contributing and helping us win hockey games.
David, we appreciate your time as always. Here's to hopefully closing out a strong January with two more games and then starting off February the right way with a home win on Saturday night before we talk to you next week. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it as always.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
All right. That is David Poile, Predators General Manager. Every week he is brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. We'll come back, discuss some of what you just heard. We'll talk about this team the rest of the hour. We do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Congratulations, Brian Collins. No, not AKA Penny. TSU's basketball coach, Brian Collins.
Well, do you know that for sure? That it wasn't Penny Collins?
Yep, because I'm looking at the spelling.
That's a good point.
A different way of spelling Brian.
It's a good call.
And Brian correctly guessed the running back.
From Super Bowl 46, the second Giants-Patriots Super Bowl, Ahmad Bradshaw fell into the end zone, even though he probably would have been better off sliding at the one. So the Giants could kick the field goal on the last play because the Patriots did throw the ball into the end zone and nearly get the tip drill. But a Bradshaw score was it. Now, for bonus points, and Elijah got this, do you know who the leading rusher for the Patriots was in that Super Bowl? Their main tailback in that game? Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis.
Yeah.
I never would have remembered that. The law firm. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis.
Forgot all about him.
I had too.
They had.
It's a musical
chair.
It's
what they've done, over the years.
They've switched up that position.
Kevin Falk, and then it's Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and it's Corey Dillon.
Danny Woodhead.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah. We could go on and on and on.
A lot of guys.
Yep.
LeGarrette Blount.
LeGarrette Blount actually had a lot of success there.
Deion Lewis.
It's the only place he had real success. Yeah, Deion Lewis. Yeah, it's.
Yeah. Blount was okay.
It's usually a committee.
Not like the New England. He was not good in Pittsburgh. Okay in Tampa. But where he really shined. And then he went to Detroit. I mean, he was all over the
Philly.
Place. Philly, yep.
He has three Super Bowls.
I know. But the one year was New England. Didn't he score like 19 touchdowns?
Yeah. Yep. And I guess he's done now.
Yeah.
He didn't play this year.
No. So congratulations, Brian Collins. Ahmad Bradshaw, you're going to see Roger Waters at Bridgestone Arena on August the 18th. So good job by you.
Love Super Bowl trivia.
Okay, let's talk about this hockey team.
Okay.
They had practice today, and it looks like John Hines is moving things around again, at least if you look at the lines today.
Yeah, one of the things that strikes me, there's two big things going on right now, and David Poile talked about one of them. I mean, it is hard to get around over time, game in, game out, not having Ryan Ellis. Because as he said,
He basically said Roman Ellis and Ryan Ellis should be left out of the discussion. Everybody else is on the
Roman
table.
Roman Yossi and Ryan Roman Ellis.
What did I just say?
You said Roman Ellis.
Well, both, yes. That is a hybrid.
That's his cousin. Both of them. That's his cousin.
They could use a hybrid. Maybe. That'd be a pretty good player, it would seem like.
You think?
But he said, you know, I don't know if it was roundabout, it was pretty directly. He said, what's the worst thing that could happen to the team based on how it's constructed? Because they took a big piece off the blue line, changed the assets around, and they used those assets to grab Matt Duchene. So they strengthened the depth of the forwards, but they did not have the same depth. So what's the worst thing that can happen? You lose either Yossi or Ellis. Well, that's happened now for about a month. And so John Hines has inherited that. And you don't know when Ryan Ellis is coming back. You hope that he's taking steps forward, but there's still no clear-cut date that you know you're going to have him. He's not going to go on this trip, I don't believe. So the next two games, you're not going to have him. I'd be stunned if he's back on Saturday. He has not gotten on the ice with the team.
Well, I was going to say, usually they skate for like a week and a half, right?
Yeah, he might. I mean,
like he hasn't even started.
It might be beneficial for him to go to Milwaukee for a game. You know, I don't know that they'll do that. They don't have that much time, but it's a delicate thing. You know, the concussion, the protocol, there are rules, right? You can't. So it's not imminent right now. It's not like he's going to be right back in there. So they don't know when they're going to get him back. So he did not reveal much of his hand on is there going to be help on the way. But John Hines is dealing with a situation where he has two great defensemen, Ekholm and Yossi. You have Yannick Weber, who was often a healthy scratch, playing on the top pair with Roman Yossi because of his familiarity with Yossi. Last night, they scrapped that after the first period. Then they tried Dante Fabbro up there. Now, Fabbro is a very talented young player, but as we said, he's not experienced right now. And it's a lot. It's a heavy load for him to carry. And some nights, he shows you where his career is going. But the consistency is not going to be there, the knowledge. It takes 100 games.
It's Seth Jones.
It took 100 games.
At the beginning here.
Absolutely. That's Seth a great Jones. One. As can, great as Seth Jones was. And he was only 18.
But as a rookie, you could see.
It takes time.
And yes. I think they, out of necessity, they rushed him to the second pairing, and I just don't think he was ready. I loved the plan of putting him with Hamuse on the third pairing last season. I would have liked to have seen that this year. Not put so much pressure on him right away. I mean, he did fine at the beginning of the year, but I feel like he's had welcome to the league moments as the season has
gone
on.
And you also not only lose a great player in Ellis, but you lose that leader, the glue guy that is going to help you through those tough times on the ice. Not that they weren't having
he's
those
the
when he was
there. Associate captain.
But yeah, he is a guy that he's a foxhole guy. Same thing with Colton Sissons, who I think will be back here soon. I think he will go on this trip and get in there. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow, but I think he's getting close. So now
looked
let's
like
go.
He skated today with the
yes,
team.
Yes, he did, and that's a great sign. Here's the other dilemma that John Hines has inherited that has been an issue from training camp, right? And that is you want to have, in a perfect world, four lines that you can roll and attack and have all four really put pressure on the defense. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened every night, right? So you get into a situation like last night. Ryan Johansson's unit struggled, right? He had Austin Watson and Cali Yarncroke with him. Buffalo, right before the break, that was a good move. You had four lines that all clicked, and that's how it should look. Watson comes in there. He does his thing physically, and they had all four lines contributing. Last night, it was a struggle. And then you look around when it's not working, you say, okay, Austin Watson has struggled. What's he doing on a line with Ryan Johansson? Cali Yarncroke has gone through a dry spell here. Johansson's not playing his best. And so that line takes a back seat. It's hard to play all four lines. You have these analytics people that are saying, well, when you're behind, you need to load up the wagons and play your best players more minutes. How are they going to get more productive? You play them more. You get them out there. So that's a dilemma. When it's not when you're not ahead and you're behind, it's hard to roll four lines. You got to pick the lines that are hot and say I'm going with them, right? And that's been the problem. The best players haven't been on the best lines particular nights because they've struggled. The other option is to load up the top skilled players on the first two lines. But when you do that, what's been the problem since training camp? Somebody has to play out of position, right? One of the centers, either Kyle Turris or Matt Duchene, has to slide over to the wing. And that has not been a perfect fit, right? So John Hines is now dealing with the same dilemma that Peter Laviolette had to deal with, right? And there's still no exact way that they've been able to settle in on, right? So what have they done different times? They tried Turris on the wing early, didn't like it. They had him on the fourth line. Kyle Turris is probably a better player than a fourth-line player. Doesn't do what a typical fourth-line centerman does. Maybe they need more size. They rotated Kyle Turris out, right? This has all been evolving, right? And they have not been able to settle in on the best way to go. Duchene hasn't really flourished on the wing. And it's the simple answer is, no matter where they're in the lineup, they just got to play better, right? The best players have to find a way. They got to deal with it. Find a way. Be better. That would solve it regardless of where the lineup is. But you can see the dilemma, right? The pieces don't fit perfectly together because of that situation with all of the centers.
We'll come back. We'll continue this discussion on the other side. But first, you've got a word about the good folks at Lee Company.
All right. We know Lee Company is a big sponsor of the Nashville Predators, and their display will be all over Bridgestone Arena when they next take the ice at home Saturday night against the Vegas Golden Knights. So with that in mind, let me tell you about some of the things they have to offer. Maintenance issues, home improvement issues. If you're thinking about your house right now and you're looking towards the spring months and maybe you've got some plans around the corner, maybe it's after the school season ends and you get into the summer months, it's a little bit more laid-back atmosphere at your house and you want to do some home improvement, or address some things at your house that need some fixing. Lee Company's got that department. They've got you covered. 615-567-1000 is the phone number. Give that number a call, and you'll be set to go. Also, you can make an online appointment at leadcompany.com. Maybe you got a nagging problem that just needs fixing right now. You've been putting it off. Make an online appointment. Get on your computer right now. Take care of the problem. Leadcompany.com is the website. Lead Company has a vast array of services for you. Look into it. 615-567-1000 for Lead Company.
So going on some of the stuff that, Willie, you were putting out there, if you look at today's skate before this team leaves for Washington today to take on the Capitals tomorrow night, Johansson was centering the first line with Granlund on the right side, Matt Duchene on the left side.
Right, so they've now gone back to what they have tried before, moving Duchene to the wing.
Mm-hmm. Second line, Kyle Turris centering the second line, Victor Arvidsson on the right side, Philip Forsberg on the left side. Colton Sissons in there centering the third line with Rocco Grimaldi on the left, Crazy Legs Craig Smith on the right, and Colin Blackwell centering the fourth line with Watson on the right side and Yakov Trenin back in the lineup on the left. And if you're wondering, well, where's Nick Bonino? Nick Bonino was absent from practice today.
And I believe Callie Yarncroak was too, that I saw.
That is correct.
Right. And so right now, with Trenin doing what he's doing, it's hard not to get him in there, right? Yeah. Even though he might have hit the wall a little bit, had a couple of games that weren't quite as good before he rotated out. But you got competition with everybody healthy. I saw Nick Bonino get in front of a lot of shots last night. I thought he played a heck of a game. You know, I thought he played well.
Nick Bonino's
had a great year.
I was going to say, he's been good all year.
All year. His line has been the best line.
There's no question.
More often than not.
No, it's been the best. It's been the most consistent line all season long.
Definitely. Definitely. Game in and game out, you can count on him and usually his line mates. But this is the dilemma, right? That shouldn't be the case. Nick Bonino would tell you that, right? Nick Bonino was his my heart went out to him last night. He was so emotional in our post-game interview on the television side. You could tell, he just said,
it was good.
It was good. The raw emotion was there.
I didn't see it. So what? Yeah. Well, I had Matt Duchene's second period intermission, and he was frustrated. Same deal. Yeah. I didn't see what he said with you guys.
Well, it was basically just illustrating all the things that David Poile showed the same frustration, just saying, hey, we just guys kind of, you know, they come at us. I'm just trying to paraphrase what he said, but they come at us with some stuff in the second period, and we just sat back and take it. You know, we it's happening too much. We have something go wrong, and we can't dig ourselves out of it. And then by the time we push back in the third, it was too late.
You know, the second half of the third period,
I thought they played a pretty good period, and they find themselves behind. But good teams keep going. You know, say, hey, let's keep doing what we're doing. We'll be all right. But then they just disappeared in that second period.
Yeah.
Well, that's happened. And that's the problem. It's happened way too much.
Way too much. Put that game right alongside of several of the other games that we've talked about this year, where you come out with this feeling. Like the both times they've played Dallas, the Anaheim game, you know, not long ago. And there's a handful of them that you can think of right away off the top of your head where they disappeared. They had lapses within the game.
Pittsburgh.
And they both Pittsburgh games, mm-hmm. right? Good examples.
Let me ask this question, because I think it, Darren, you've brought up certain individuals, we all have, of the players that need to play better, the guys on this team that need to go up to another level. Peter Laviolette.
Well, let me just say this. It's really everybody. I know David Poile. Right. I mean, I would agree. There's a select group, but overall, when you're having issues like this, honestly, it's but what people gravitate towards, and it's fair whether you think it's fair or unfair. It's just the players that make, you know, the most money, players that have big contracts, you know, that they're going to be held to a higher standard, and that's the way it works in sports.
So Peter Laviolette was not afraid to scratch Kyle Turris. Kyle Turris makes $6 million a year. We talked about it on this show at nauseam when he was scratched. Whether you agreed with it, disagreed with it, we're in the middle, it didn't matter. We discussed it. So my question is, when does it get to a point where somebody else that maybe makes more money is going to get scratched and get a healthy scratch and get that, you know what? And I know you look on paper and you say, you need Ryan Johansson in the lineup. You need Matt Duchene. You need Philip Forsberg. You need Victor Arvidsson. But if they're not playing to the ability that we know they have, when does John Hines make that decision of, you know what, player X, you're going to sit tonight?
It's a good question. I do think there's going to be some competition because there are options that they have with the forwards. On defense right now, it's the opposite, right? They don't have enough right now. They're just trying to piece it together until they can get Ellis back, unless they can swing a deal and bring in another veteran, which I think even when Ellis is there, you could argue that team, that position group, they could use another guy in that area in a perfect world. But
and you keep going back to Ellis, and I get it, and rightfully so. Like they are missing him tremendously in the lineup, but that's not the only issue.
Of course not.
You know, I'm looking at more of the forwards, that there are –
I guess the point Chase is saying is this was going on when Ellis was in there, too. I mean,
yes.
It's not him, but this stuff that we're discussing was already happening.
This conversation, in my opinion, is similar to, well, when Taylor Lewan gets back, the offensive line is just going to look great again. I mean, they're going to start playing like they have been when Taylor Lewan gets back. No, and that's not what happened.
But that is what happened, eventually.
Eventually, but not right away.
That's the key word, eventually.
I think, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I think some people think that, okay, once Ellis is back, all right, here we go.
Not at all. I'm not saying that in the least. You didn't let me finish what I was saying. My point was, on defense, you don't have a lot of options right now. You're thin. On the forwards, you do have options. You have the ability to move the pieces around. You can rotate some guys out. You have some healthy bodies there. They are trying, it looks like, based on practice, to load the first two lines up again and see if they can take more of the traditional approach. The top two lines, a checking line, and then a fourth line that you play less and you try to get energy from that group, et cetera. There have been way too many times, right, during these struggles that
the bottom six has been better than the top six. Yeah.
And so you're saying, well, what? That shouldn't be.
Well, that's great, but you can't have it.
Right, yeah, you love that. Great job by the bottom six, but where's the top six? So now they're going to try this again. This is the first time since Hines has taken over they're going to go back to this format. Now, somebody has got to play out of position and do well. Right, Matt Duchene's got to take the bull by the horns and say, you know what, I'm a center, but for this team, right now I got to play wing, and I got to make the most of it, got to make it happen. So hopefully something clicks there, because I think that's the next option is, you know, shake it up, take a guy out. Like that, I don't know. Maybe that is a card you could play.
Well, I think you want to play that card before you trade somebody. And because as David Poyle told us, they don't have a lot of time to figure this out, to decide what they're going
to
do
a month
at the deadline.
A little bit over 3 weeks before the deadline.
Well, I think, you're right.
February 25th, so that's about a month.
Yeah,
a little bit less than a month.
So you got an extra day in February.
Yep. So they have to...
Before the leap year day. Yeah.
4 days before.
Yeah, so 4 weeks.
Look how quick I came up with that.
Yeah.
Whew.
Proud of you.
Kentucky education coming in handy. All right, we'll come back. We'll continue this discussion. We'd love to get you involved as well. What do you think right now through 48 games? We'll take your text. We'll take your calls. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. It's time to hear from the fans. You guys are loud. You're proud. You're vocal. You're there. Tell us what you think. I mean, what is your mindset as we're about to close out the month of January? That's 4 months in the books. And then they're going to have their two heaviest months coming up in February and March. We'll do that to kick off the third hour of Darren, Donnick, and Chase. That's next.